Welcome back to another episode of Be Here for a While. I am so excited about my guest today. I feel like I said about everyone, but seriously, Sarah's story completely captivated me. So let me tell you a little bit about her. So I heard Sarah's horrific dating story, engagement story, on the first season of a podcast called Something Was Wrong. It's very good. I recommend that you check it out. And I literally couldn't stop listening to it. Like, I was like going on night walks to get away from Greg so I could just like listen to this podcast. Just like, I had to finish it. And so I reached out to her and asked her to be a guest today on Be Here for a While, because I mean, her story really resonated with me because, you know, until I met Greg, I dated a lot of losers, but I think it's a very human thing to, you know, you're not all of a sudden like the smartest person after, you know, one bad guy. Like, you know, smart, narcissistic, you know, manipulative people, they can get you no matter how many times you've been through it, no matter how many times you think you can recognize all the red flags. Granted, I think you do get, you know, smarter each time, and you know, the trauma of going through that, I think, just like puts your guard up or whatever. But I mean, yeah, it just, I felt like Sarah would be a great person for you guys to hear from because, you know, whether it be a friend, an ex-boyfriend, girlfriend, fiance, husband, you know, wife, whatever, you've definitely encountered people like this before. Granted, I think that Sarah's experience is like pretty extreme. But yeah, I just think that there's going to be a lot you're going to learn from her story. This is going to be a two-part episode because, you know, she basically breaks down an entire relationship and these huge revelations that she figures out. And in the course of, you know, we talked for like 2 hours. So I'm breaking up into two sections. I think you're going to get a lot out of it. I think you are just going to be fascinated. And yeah, so basically, I think for this first part, I just want to point out what you're going to notice from this, her ex-boyfriend or ex-fiance, is he does a lot of love bombing. And I looked up from therapist Sarah Kubrick what the 13 signs of love bombing are. And I just want to like list these out so you can, you know, maybe you can apply it to a past experience in your life or a current one, or you can look out for these in Sarah's story. So 13 signs of love bombing. They make grand romantic gestures / give extravagant gifts. Definitely happens in her story. They always compliment you. They promote, well, I mean, I'm not a psychologist, but let me just give you my opinion. God, I'm an idiot. They always compliment you, but usually that's in the beginning and then it gets flipped where it then becomes like insults later. It's like once they have you hooked. They promote excessive communication. They request constant attention. They demand commitment. They resist your boundaries. They make soulmate claims. They say, I love you very quickly. They are good at saying what you want to hear. They feel too good to be true. Oh, Sarah mentions that so many times in this. They make you feel like you're being saved. Also applies. They make immediate promises about the future and they put you on a pedestal. All those sound great, right? Until they're not. So anyways, you're going to love Sarah. You can follow her on Instagram. Her Instagram is called Space and Purpose. I'm purposely not saying her last name because I never really figured out if she wanted me to say it. So, but you can follow her there. And yeah, so this is the first part of her story. I leave you on a bit of a cliffhanger. It gets nutty in part two, and that will be out next week. And yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. I love you. Have a great weekend. This is Friday. I'm going to Joshua Tree this weekend. I'm super excited. Me and Greg and Kristen Doty and her boyfriend, Minash. I don't know why I don't just say Alex. Minash is so much harder to say, but whatever. We're going to have a good time. I haven't been around people in a while, so I'm super excited. I hope you guys have a great weekend. Thanks for listening. Without further ado, give it up for Sarah. All right. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for doing this. I feel like I stalked you before I asked you to do the podcast. I like followed you and I was like, cause I was like listening to your story on Something Was Wrong. And I was like, I'd like to ask her to be a guest, but I'd actually already reached out to Tiffany to be a guest and Tiffany was busy, but she's like, I'd like to be a guest at some point. And then I was like,
is it weird if I ask Sarah, who was her story? Like, I don't know. So then I asked her permission to ask you. It was a whole thing.
Oh my gosh, that's so sweet of you. No, I was stoked.
Okay, amazing. So yeah, thank you so much for doing this. I just feel like your story, I know, I have like a mostly female audience. I know this will resonate with them. I know that many of them have experienced something similar to this. And I know how validating it is to hear someone else's story so you don't feel crazy. You know?
Oh my gosh. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell me a little bit about like the, where you were right before you met your ex? Spoiler alert, they break up. Because it seemed like you kind of had a plan in motion of the man you wanted to meet. I know that you said like you were praying for, you know, a man that would kind of treat you like how Christ treats the church. Is that what it was? I get it
yeah,
right.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately I wanted someone who embodied, you know, a godly man, which I think even if people don't share my same beliefs, it's pretty, you know, across the board, they want someone who's going to treat them well, you know, yeah. Who's going to prioritize family and be honest and, you know, kind and loyal and, you know, side note, maybe attractive, talented, charismatic. I just always went for big personalities. Mm-hmm. So I loved the place I lived. I was living in downtown Sacramento, had a couple roommates, a job with really close friends. I had my dream dog and I just was having a ton of fun and was also on Bumble and Hinge and living in downtown Sacramento. It's kind of fun, you know, cause my friends and I were kind of doing the whole online dating thing together and sending each other profiles and either, you know, laughing or crying or getting excited together, which was, it was just a fun time.
Yeah.
I was having a blast.
Totally. Been there, done that.
Yeah. It's like a rite of passage. It was great. And I didn't want anything to mess it up. And I was on Hinge and I saw this guy that had really like great photos. He had a great eye. And of course his profile talks about God. So I'm like, check. He had a picture of a French bulldog on a beach. And I'm like, check, check to other things I love. And you know, food, he just kind of like hit all the things that I enjoyed. And plus he was good looking. And
I love that you almost said food. That was like one of my favorite things about you that you kept saying in that podcast. I was like, that's the way to my heart. Like
priorities. Yeah. Like
food's my passion. Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't even pretend. And let's be honest. I think a lot of the times that I fell further in love with him was over a dinner while we were talking.
So funny.
He had great taste in food. I will hand that to him and wine and whiskey. And yeah, the guy is like, he knows his stuff when it comes to that. And he could cook anyway. I mean,
oh, wow.
He wasn't, you know, just the devil from day one. That guy is charismatic and very, you know, multifaceted. So yeah, he drove all the way out from the Bay Area. It was a long drive, showed up with flowers and food. He asked me if I had any dietary restrictions before even showing up with a plate of food. And I was just like, oh, like pick me up off the floor.
Yeah, seriously.
And took me to a concert and was super sweet, stayed late that night. I went in for the first kiss, which is so not like me, especially on date one. I'm usually a lot more reserved and, you know, people think I'm, I don't know, anyway, like a hard nut to crack. But I was just like, you know what? I'm going to do it differently this time. I really like this guy. And I went for it. And we just got really serious really fast. I'm pretty sure he met my parents the next weekend.
Oh, wow.
Which I get is crazy. And there's,
no,
you know.
No. I think that can go either way, where it's like, this is really meant to be. Well, I mean, that's what's so scary. So I don't want to give the story away. This is what's going to come after. I'm not even going to interrupt but that is what's so scary. It's like, you're willing to meet my parents. You've got to be great.
Right. I mean, who doesn't want a guy that's like, sure. And it wasn't like he was pushing for it in a creepy way. It was just like, oh, your dad has doubts. Well, he can just meet me himself. And I'm like, well, that's genius. You know, come on up kind of thing. This guy's got, you know, balls to drive up and meet, you know, I mean, my dad, you know, was a Marine back in the day and he's been a fire chief for years. He's very, you know, all American, kind of more quiet, tends to intimidate people because he's more reserved. And so they don't always know what he's thinking. And I'm like, this dude's willing to just drive up and, you know, sit right in front of my dad and be like, here I am, you know, rip me to shreds, do what you will. So he came out, met my parents and things just moved really fast. He wanted me to meet his family. We would be in the car. I think it was our first date on the way to that concert that he was Snapchatting with his brother and telling me hilarious things his brother was saying. And next thing I know, he's FaceTiming his brother and I'm in the car shoving salad into my mouth on the way to this concert. And we're all just being really real, you know, from the beginning. I was laughing and I was like pushing the phone out of my face going, look, like I'm, you know, don't interrupt me. It's a sacred time. I'm eating, you know, in the car, leave me alone. And he was just, it was just so, I guess it felt like family from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And he would FaceTime. He would be in, he was in Colorado officiating a wedding and he FaceTimed me all of a sudden. His mom was in the background. He's like, hey, Ma, say hi, you know, and she just lit. She was so sweet in her, you know, blue eyes. And she was just like, hi, Sarah, come and stay with us. You know, my heart's like melting into, you know, a puddle on the floor. I'm like, okay.
I just got chipped a little because that would have gotten me.
Yeah. And he's close with his family. And if somebody asks you to officiate their wedding, like that's big time brownie points, you know, in a new relationship. I'm like, okay, he has friends that respect him enough to ask him to officiate a wedding. Mm-hmm. And he talked about his goddaughter that was out there. And I'm like, okay, another person has him as, you know, points were just going through the roof. And he's like, I can't wait for you to meet my friends. He would always go the extra mile, would always come to me, would take me places, flew me to Texas to meet family, flew me to Colorado, took me to Seattle, and would always do all the arrangements, wouldn't let me do anything. And I was kind of uncomfortable with it. It wasn't like I was like, sure, you know, wine and dine me, sweep me off my feet. I kept saying like, do you think that I, after a while, I kind of felt like I was getting annoying. I didn't want, you know, if someone wants to treat you well the way that they want to treat you mm-hmm. or show love, I don't want to shoot that down. But at the same time, I had never experienced something on this scale.
Yeah.
So part of me was like, is this too good to be true? And the other part of me was like, well, you know, damn it. What if this is the dream? Why not just, you know?
Yeah. Why do I do it? Yeah. Am I just being cynical? Like after all these years of being single or something?
Yeah. Am I just finally like, God forbid, should I just self-sabotage myself out of my own, you know, fantasy that's finally shown up at my door with flowers and food. And I would say a couple times like, you know, oh no, we don't need to get that. And I would get something smaller on the menu or just enough to make it clear that I'm not here for the money. You know, I'm a little bit uncomfortable, but I didn't want to constantly shoot it down. So I'm stating that because later in the relationship that came up and, you know, he used it against me, but he spent Christmas with my family and which is a sacred day. If you ask my sister, like no one is allowed in that holiday in our family. Mm-hmm. We have to keep it the same way we've had it, you know, for years. And my siblings and I, you know, been single a long time. So we've always had Christmas the same way.
Your sister is allowed, by the way.
I'll pass that along to her.
It feels like, but like, I mean, this is a compliment because I bulldoze into a room too. It feels like she just sort of bulldozes into a room and like, it's what she says goes and it's hilarious.
Yeah. Her nickname was Taz for a long time or just like bulldozer. We always said she's a bulldozer. She gets things done and she, you know, everyone always knows where they stand. She's not, you know, she's really kind, but also if she doesn't trust you, you're gonna know.
So, it's a great quality to have.
Yeah. I mean, why not? So she had to suck it up and he, you know, encroached on our sacred Christmas holiday, or however you say that. So, then she, which I found out later, she, you know, posted on social media that she just adored him and everything. And so there's little things like my family's never, I don't know. I mean, I've dated, you know, guys in the past and they're always super welcoming and welcomed everyone with open arms, but they've never felt like, okay, this person is a good fit for her. You know, they've always liked, it's not like they hated them, but they were just like, no, it's not for you. This was the first time that everyone was just as starry-eyed as I was. And so that also to me was like, okay, I mean, it's not that my family dictates what I do, but it means a lot to have their approval. So mm-hmm. I took that as, okay, I'm not crazy. I'm going to keep moving forward. Yeah. And meanwhile, while all this is happening, I remember we're in the car one day and he looked at his phone and he goes, oh my God, my, you know, batshit crazy friend in an argument with his wife right now. She's crazy. They're amazing. You know what? You would love these people. And I was like, cool. Yeah. Okay. And he goes, oh, let me tell you. So he launches into the story. They're in New York. The husband has a drop ship business. She's raising their three kids. One of them's adopted, you know, and full, yeah, Brian and Kimmy. And he's like talking about Brian and Kimmy. And she's like, and he looks down at his phone. He's like, oh shit, she just snapped, or he just Snapchatted me. I'm pretty sure she threw something at him. They're in a fight. And I'm like, why is he snapping you? Like, what? These people are crazy.
And did he's like, he show oh, you any of these snaps?
No.
Okay.
No, he didn't show them to me. And I kind of was like, I almost feel like this is a violation of their, like, why is the husband Snapchatting a fight right now to his friend across the country from New York? You know, this is just, it sounds a little bit like they're kind of a lot.
Yeah.
So you keep that mess over there. And I didn't associate them with him. I was just like, they're friends that live across the country. They're snapping it. Like, I don't necessarily judge him. We all have, you know, wild friends, whatever.
Yeah.
But he kept talking about them and he's like, I kind of feel like you'd click with Kimmy though. She's one of those people that just, like, you know, keeps it spicy and it's good to have those people around. And I was like, ha ha ha. So we let it go. Well, I think it was maybe that night or the next day that he's like, hey, I hope it's okay, but I gave Kimmy your number. I don't remember if he gave Kimmy my number or gave me hers, but then I get a text.
And how far in is this in the relationship?
I want to say like 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
They started quick. Early. Okay.
It did. But also 2 weeks into this too, we were getting like, I know it sounds like a really short amount of time, but we lived a lot of life in those 2 weeks. We were already seeing each other a lot. I had already met his family virtually. He had met mine in person. We were getting really emotionally close really fast. So it wasn't super weird to me that I was already, that I had the phone number of one of his friend's wives because I had already, you know, talked to him and his family online. And I wasn't taking this as like, oh, I just, you know, got installed with a new best friend. I just had someone's number, whatever. I might never talk to her. No big deal. But she was pretty chatty and really sarcastic and just really like, she would fire off really like rapid fire, witty texts. And words are my thing. So without even thinking this is unusual, I just got distracted by how funny she was. And so I would fire something back. And we liked a lot of the same TV shows. And she just kind of intuitively, you know, like when you just click with someone you've never met, even online, or you just know, okay, I could laugh with this girl. She's funny.
Yeah.
And we were like quoting New Girl to each other and just talking about our favorite wines. And there were a couple things that she said where I was like, I literally just said that the other day. This is hysterical. So it would be like a couple texts a week to then like every other day. So she would say something like, okay, you want any dirt on, you know, my friend? Cause I've known him a long time. And I'm like, oh, she's that kind of girl. Okay. So no thanks. Cause if she's the type of girl that's going to dish anything on him, she's going to report right back to him that I'm asking questions.
Smart. Yeah. Smart.
Didn't want to play that game.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, no, he and I are pretty open with, you know, with each other. There's nothing. If I wanted to know anything, I feel like I could ask him. Because he was so open, and that's the way he came across, was just like, his phrase was, I'm an open book. I'm an open book. There is no question you can ask me that I won't answer. And, you know, if there's something, you know, I'll be as raw as, you know, I can possibly be, and you can take it or leave it. So that immediately, all someone has to do is say that, and I won't even ask a lot of the hard questions because you just, your walls kind of come down a little bit.
Totally.
And I wish I had kept the walls up and I had asked the questions, but because he seemed so open, I didn't even see the need to ask the questions.
Yeah.
If that, you know, makes sense. So.
It's a good tactic of a manipulator. Like, it almost puts you on the like, oh gosh, now I would look like a jerk if I started asking. Like he told me, like he kind of opened up by being so open without like telling me anything. And he's telling me I can ask him anytime. Well, now I don't even really want to.
Right.
Yeah.
Now I'm kind of putting it back in your face kind of thing. Well, okay. You know, and not appreciating how honest he is. And he would do that with my parents too. He would tell them, you want to know about my past? You want to know like anything? And they were just like, no. I mean, yeah, you guys are at first they were like, yeah, you guys are moving really fast, but you are really open with us. And that's, they just said, that's all we ask is that you stay open. That's all we ask. And then, you know, later when he wasn't as open, that's when things changed. Cause they knew. He said he would always stay open and now he's going back on his word. So anyway, back up to Kimmy's texting me and cracking me up and asking me if I want to know anything about my ex and stuff. And then she would ask, you know, kind of check in and go, so, you know, how are things going? How are you feeling? You know, he's pretty much all but dropped the L bomb. You know, he's kind of holding back so he doesn't freak you out. Like, are you in love yet? And that was maybe, so we met in August. So by October was when we were booking flights. I hadn't met his like family and friends yet, but Kimmy was asking me a lot, like, you know, he's, I'm pretty sure he's telling Brian that he's like in love and he's thinking about a ring. Like, so where are you at? And I remember having this moment of like, uh-oh, you know, shoot, I'm not there yet. I want to get there. And I started kind of getting hard on myself and going, well, should I pull the brakes back because he's further ahead than I am? Or should I just loosen up, you know, let it go and let it happen naturally on my end and not let his level of seriousness, you know, freak me out because mm-hmm. he hasn't told me anything. So I don't want to fault him, you know, for secretly being in love with me and telling his friend and not telling me. It's like, he's done the right thing. He hasn't told me, you know?
Yeah.
I would have been freaked out if he had told me, but I wasn't freaked out. I thought, well, at least he's bottled it up and, you know, he knows better than to drop the L-bomb.
And that would have been
weeks in.
No, I thought it was August and then October. August, September,
oh, you're right.
October. Well, I guess you're right. If it was like end of August, that could have been, but you were still willing to go visit his like get on a flight and visit people before the L-bomb had been dropped. I mean, I guess
I remember. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I guess it's, yeah, that, I guess that makes sense. I would just, I don't know. I guess it doesn't, not one has to come first, but.
If we hadn't dropped the L-bomb before then, if we hadn't said, no, I remember we were in Seattle. How did I forget that? And Seattle was the second or, I don't remember, but it was on one of those trips. It was in Seattle that I said, I love you. So we had pretty much been there,
mm-hmm.
but I kind of like, I think I was holding out to just kind of see how his family behaved around him, what the dynamic was and stuff before I was willing to like totally go there in my mind and heart and say it to him too.
Mm-hmm.
But because Kimmy had asked me a few weeks before we started flying around, which was like end of November. Anyway, it was all within like this 2-3 month span. And I remember thinking, shoot, he's moving really fast. But logically, I kind of like got out of my feelings. And in my head, I was like, okay, on paper, this is totally what I want. So mm-hmm. I'm just not going to sweat this. I'm going to move full steam ahead because I know that the feelings will come.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And hindsight, I shouldn't have done.
Yeah. I was like, I wonder if that was your intuition. I mean, I wouldn't have personally been able to recognize that as intuition at the time, but like in hindsight, maybe that was your intuition just being like, something's not right. Even though there was no signs yet, something in your gut was just like, it scared you a little bit.
Yeah. It was 100% my gut saying there's something missing here. Like there's an emptiness to it. And it's crazy how our bodies just know. Mm-hmm. And when in my head, I was like, there is nothing wrong. And that's why on Tiffany's podcast, we were saying there were no red flags. Well, looking back, there were hundreds of red flags, but there weren't logical, like ones that I could pinpoint and that I had been taught to recognize yet.
Yeah.
I was just being treated like a queen.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. And yeah, it was over the top, but why I didn't know that I should fault someone or not, you know,
I guess this is kind of like, was going to be like one of my later questions, but it doesn't ruin the story to say it. But like, I honestly think if that just you hearing your story, and if I wasn't with my boyfriend now, but if that same scenario happened to me and I've had, you know, any other bad experience before, I don't think I would have been able to recognize it either. Like, I don't think it would have been enough to be like, I should break up with this person because he's being too nice. Like who would do that?
Exactly.
Like,
right.
Who would do that?
Well, and looking back, yeah, I did have questions. I did, you know, there were little parts of me that were going, should I trust that? So sure. But I didn't know that the answer was no, you know, and I'm also trying to be more open-minded. I grew up taking dating extremely seriously and kind of got a late start in it. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this differently for once. I'm not going to be in my head. I'm just going to roll with it mm-hmm. and, you know, see what happens. So kind of went to the opposite extreme. But
I mean, not too. It's literally not like you got engaged after a month. It's, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's not that extreme. Like it happens to people all the time. So anyways, okay. So you're in Seattle and that's the first time that you guys say, I love you. And you're meeting friends. Are you noticing anything weird around his friends at this point?
No. You know, what's crazy is the friends in Seattle that we met, sweet married couple with kids, the husband of that couple even said when he hugged my ex, he looked at me and he's like, I have a man crush on this guy. Like he kind of like idolized him a little bit. You could tell it was like seeing his face lit up. It was like seeing a celebrity come in, you know, that he gets to see once every, you know, 5 years and give a big old hug. And my ex has this big, loud, booming voice. You know, he's a big guy. So he walks in a room and kind of commands a lot of attention.
Yeah.
So he just walked in like, hey, you know, what's up? And, you know, picks him up in a big bear hug. And, you know, as we were leaving, the guy just looked at me multiple times and was just like, I have such a man crush on your boyfriend. You know, what am I supposed to think? I'm like,
nothing.
I'd
have been into it.
Yeah. And then in Colorado, we go to dinner with this couple, the couple that asked him to be the godfather of their daughter. And they were, I mean, the wife was, I'm trying to remember where she was from, but anyway, she spoke a lot of Spanish and she had the most beautiful accent. And she took my face in her hands and called me Sarita. And she would kiss my cheeks and she would just like, her eyes would like fill with tears.
Gosh.
She was just so expressive and
how
she
sweet.
Oh my gosh. And we're sitting at the dining room table, you know, drinking wine. We're there till like 10:30 at night. And you can hear, you know, my ex and her husband in the other room and my ex is laughing. And she said, oh, I've missed that laugh. And I'm just like, what? And she's talking about, you know, when you're ready to have kids. And she was going on and on, you know, she's a little tipsy by now. And so am I. So we're emotional. We're bonding. I'm just pretty much like, I love you too. You can be, you know, I want to be the godmother to your future kids, whatever. And she was just like, you know, it's always the woman's timeline. She knows. And I'm just like, yeah, I'll know. We're so buzzed. But it's like so experiences funny. Like this that, you know, it just bonded me to him even more because she idolized and adored him. And I even remember I heard his laugh that he was doing in the kitchen. And it's so weird. I had this kind of out of body experience in that moment that didn't mean anything to me until later that I recognized this particular laugh he would pull out in social situations only. I never heard it any other place. And I heard him do it in the kitchen and something in me even buzzed, like high on life, you know, being treated like a queen. I was at like on like a mountaintop experience. My gut turned when I heard that laugh. And in my head, I didn't even know why. So again, like another sign that my body just knew inauthentic, you know, that inauthentic.
See, that gives me chills. I remember you saying that in the podcast where it's like, you knew that something, that's just your body telling you in some way. Yeah.
It's crazy. And while we were on the trip, you know, Kimmy was pretty quiet. I think she maybe texted me like once, but during all of the like flights and trips and stuff, I didn't hear from her a whole lot. And when I met his family in Colorado, you know, I stayed with his parents and his mom had a whole room made up for me in the bathroom. And she had all these, it was like walking into my own Airbnb. I was treated so well. And then in Texas, I met his aunt and uncle, same situation. And they let us drive his cool little, you know, sports car and took us grocery shopping and made us all these great meals and took us all over the place. We went to Magnolia Market and to Fort Worth and saw the cattle drive. And I was just like, I'd never been there. It was a blast. Cool. So how do you not, you know, fall for this guy? It's almost like, you know, when you're put on The Bachelor, half of those women, you know, should never be falling for that guy.
Great example, actually, where it's like, this is the best parts of everything. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not real life, but sure, I could fall in love with anybody in The Bachelor if he's hot and I'm in a helicopter and I'm being fed champagne and caviar, you know.
Yeah, you don't even know what's happening.
Yeah, totally. Sure, I'm in love.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what this felt like.
Yeah.
And then we did New Year's and then it was sometime around, I want to say, he proposed. We were ring shopping around like Christmas. So of course, picture we're in San Francisco, you know, we're ring shopping. It's Christmas. It's all decorated.
Oh, God, it's so pretty there over Christmas. Ugh.
Oh yeah. I mean, like you try not to fall in love when you're not even just, we're already in love, but like not to get even deeper in mentally, you know, when you're walking the streets of the city. And plus he's lived there. He has we'd be driving down the street in the city and he'd yell out the window at a coworker. And so he was so connected. And would take me places, anything I wanted. So we ended up getting a ring custom designed for me. And the weekend we got engaged, he planned a huge surprise party, drove me to my parents' house. All of my friends and stuff were there. Walk in, I'm crying because no one's ever, you know, done anything on this scale for me like that. And then the very next day, I was whisking him away to Yosemite for his 30th birthday because he'd never been to Yosemite before. So I'm like, cha-ching, I'm going to nail this. And in the meantime, planning his birthday, Brian had been a really big help. He texted me several weeks, maybe even a month before, like saying, hey, do you need any ideas? You know, there's this leather-bound Bible that he really likes. Just, hey, let me know kind of where you're at with his birthday. I can give you some hints. And I'm like, sure, send me the link to the Bible. I've already got a couple ideas. I bounced it off him. And he was like, you want me to just order the Bible for you? And I'm like, no. But okay. Anyway.
So weird.
Side note, it was fine until that. That was weird. Moving on. And then I, because all of his, he's got friends in, like, I want to say Virginia, North Carolina. And obviously his family's like all over the place. It's his 30th birthday. I knew that words were really important to him. So I came up with this idea where I wanted to contact all of his, the people that I heard him talk about the most. I wanted their contact info so that they could send him just a little quip or, you know, word of advice or something for his 30s or something that they appreciate or miss about him or whatever, just so that he could feel surrounded by his friends and family when he was alone in California. Little did I know he wasn't as alone as I thought he was. Spoiler alert. So Brian, I reached out to Brian. I was like, hey, here's my idea, but I need help. Do you happen to know all these people? And he was like, oh, hell yeah, man, I'm going to hook you up. So he starts rapid fire texting me all these phone numbers and I'm going, yes. So I spent hours of my life, copy pasting like texts, emails, reaching out to people going, okay, I know you don't know me. Here's my name. You know, here's why I'm reaching out. It's his birthday. Can you send this? Here's my email. And so I was compiling all of these little notes and some of them were longer than others. And I got a little like leather bound moleskin notebook and I hand wrote every single freaking letter in that whole notebook.
Oh my God.
And then we got to Yosemite, you know, gave it to him and he was all emotional and cried and it was tons of fun. So
one of the things that made my skin crawl the most was the letter that Kimmy and Brian wrote to you. Because at first when I heard that letter, I was like, is Kimmy into him? Like, this is really like, this is, he needs to be touched. It scared the hell out of me. You don't have to obviously read the whole letter. I know that you must have given it to Tiffany to read, or she read it on the podcast, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah. Can you paraphrase it?
Yeah. So it was after we got engaged. We're a ways into our relationship. Well, a ways as in like emotionally and, you know, event wise, but it was only a few months. It was after we were engaged though. I want to say like late January. So a few months into it, he just flippantly hands me a couple of envelopes and he says, hey, these got sent to me or no, something about, yeah, these are from Kimmy and Brian. They asked me not to open them and just give them to you. Now, meanwhile, back at the beginning of our relationship, maybe, a month or two in, it was January. Shoot, I'm forgetting. But anyway, they had already mailed me a present. They were in Africa trying to go through this adoption process and they mailed a handmade robe from Rwanda. It was beautiful. And he was just like, hey, they wanted you, they shipped it to my place in the Bay and wanted you to have it. And you could tell this thing had come a long way. It was super wrapped up and everything. And it was authentic. And while it was beautiful, I was just like, I'm not going to wear it because it just wasn't my style at all. And it was kind of rough. Like it wasn't super comfy to wear, but it was more just really beautiful to look at, like kind of like a piece of art. So I thought, okay, well, I appreciate it, but now I feel funny because I don't know what to do with this. So I just put it away. And then, you know, a month or two later, we're engaged, we're looking at houses and pretty serious as far as like wedding planning. And he hands me a couple of letters and he said, hey, these are from Brian and Kimmy. They had originally, I think they had written like handwritten ones, but it got lost in the mail. So he just sent me the file like from his drive and asked me to like print it out for you kind of thing. He's like, hope it's not weird. So they were typed, they weren't handwritten. And by then it was pretty established in my mind that Kimmy was a little bit weird. She was just kind of not super nice. So my trust had been broken with her a little bit. So I'm reading these letters and I'm thinking, okay, what have you got to say? And one was from her, one was from him. And they were both just like, basically we are sitting down, like crying while we're typing these letters, like sitting across from each other. Like Brian and Kimmy were at a coffee shop somewhere, sitting across from each other, typing up these letters to the future wife of their best friend, because there were just some things that they wanted them to understand, you know, like, he loves, what was it? Oh, I wish the letters were packed away somewhere, but it's something like his love is like an ocean. Something about like the depths of his feelings are just like the capacity of his heart is beyond understanding, you know, being in a relationship with him is like being on, you know, the biggest roller coaster of your life, you know, just ride the waves kind of thing. And, you'll never be loved, you know, more deeply, and, but also guard his heart and watch, like, don't have a sharp tongue around him, because as deep as his love is, it's as tender as his heart is. And it's just like,
Jesus Christ.
I can't even, I can't even make it sound as disgusting as it actually was.
It was like, I remember when I first started listening to the letter be read on Tiffany's podcast, I had like my waterproof speaker and I was in the shower and I could only kind of like hear it. And I was like, oh no, when I finish showering, I got to go back and listen to this whole thing. Cause I was like, this is one of the craziest fucking things I've ever heard.
So creepy, creepy. And it was just like, touch him, you know, like advice from.
He needs physical touch.
Yeah. Like almost like reassurance, you know, but just like when this happens or when this happens, do this, touch him, don't argue, do this. And it was so, and you know, there were times that I had wondered, because Kimmy and Brian seemed to kind of idolize my fiance. I'm thinking, what chick or even guy, you know, texts their old friend who lives across the country that they haven't seen in ages, like texts his girlfriend constantly trying to reach out and build a friendship with her and talks like super stoked about her fiance. And I'm like, wow, you guys are really into him. And there were a couple times, I don't remember if maybe I had this conversation with my roommate or a friend, where I was like, you think maybe there's like a little bit of a past there with Kimmy and, you know, my fiance? Cause
that's what I thought when I heard the letter, when it was like when she started talking about the physical touch, I can forget exactly what the wording was, but yeah, it was like, I don't know. It was very like, why would you know that? Why would you know right. that that's what he needs? And I think she used the words like he needs this. Like,
yeah.
Why would you know, ma'am?
Well, and even if you do know, why say it? The fact that she couldn't see how, like what a red flag and how batshit crazy it would be to state this to his future wife. Like, does she not think that I can figure this out on my own?
Yeah. So weird. Help,
but thank you. And I told, you know, I read the letters and I said something. I remember just kind of like shoving them in a drawer and being like, that's going to go away for a little while.
I'm going to need to forget about that.
Yeah. And it's weird even that I didn't pay attention to my response at the time. I remember reading the letters thinking, okay, and shoved them in a drawer and then said something to him about them, kind of like, hey babe, did you see what was in those? And he acted really weird, but kind of a little too nonchalant. He was just like, yeah. And I went, okay. And he just was kind of weird about them. And so I didn't want to bring anything up. I just thought, okay, by now it's established. We both know his friends aren't all that great. I did think it was weird that he chose not to mention that he wasn't super, you know, I don't know, into them until now, when at the beginning it was like, oh, these are my best friends. You should text Kimmy. You know, you guys should become really close. You'll love her, whatever. You need her. She needs you. Oh, the big shtick was she doesn't have a lot of female friends. And I think that you have this ability to make people feel very comfortable. And she would just be, you would be a great support for her. And even like one time when I got really mad at her and stopped texting her, because I'm like, this woman is just mean. Brian then reached out to me either the same day or the day after and said, hey, just on behalf of my wife, like have patience with her. She doesn't have a lot of female friends. She's very isolated. Quite frankly, you're the only other woman that has given her the time of day and like stuck with her. So now I see the crazy abusive, you know, nature in that.
Yeah.
And the manipulation there. But at the time I didn't like it, but I thought, well, it was sometime around like, I want to say February, March, my timeline's kind of fuzzy now, which I'm thankful for, because that's a good sign.
Yeah.
My mom started like asking some questions. She was saying, well, what about, he said he was going to buy you like a grand piano. And I'm going, Mom, yeah, he wants to buy me a grand piano. Not right now. I don't want one right now. That's like future. And she kind of wouldn't let little things go like that. And I'm thinking, calm down. I don't want him to get me things right now.
By the way, that was like one of the only things that I recognized early as like, he's not going to buy you fucking grand piano. Why is he saying that? Like when he first said that to you, like on an early date, I'm like, that one I recognized as like an over promise that was like not going to be delivered. And additionally, I think you told your mom, like, we want to like get a house. We want to like whatever. But like that grand gesture to like kind of sweep you off your feet. I was like, all right, bullshit, dude.
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and in his defense too, he did say later, you know, he said something like, I meant it, but we ended up, you know, like getting engaged so fast and now we want a house and now we want this. So instead I started a separate account where I'm like putting money away and saving for that piano.
All right. It's a good lie. Know, yeah.
He will hold your eye contact while telling you that too. So I'm like, and of course I feel bad because I didn't want him to think that the piano mattered to me, you know, or that it had anything to do with whether or not I would stay with him or just anything.
Yeah.
But my mom would not let that go. And there were a couple of other things. Oh, Kimmy said that, hey, when you start dress shopping, have your ex fly you out to New York or have your, at the time, you know, have him fly you out to New York and I'll take you to Kleinfeld or whatever it was. What's the say yes to the dress place?
It's Kleinfeld. And, yeah.
Kleinfeld. Okay. And I will, you know, I've got friends out there. I'll get you a custom design dress. So in my mind, this isn't my ex being over the top. This is his fancy as F friends in New York that want to fly me out. And I'm just going, okay. I don't even know if I'd want to do that. That's a lot of pressure, but really cool. So my mom kept going, okay, so is his friend gonna, now it's time to dress shop. And I'm just like, no, they ended up going over to London with, you know, Brian's work and they're kind of going through this adoption situation for this little girl that they met in Africa. And it's a total shit show right now. It's a mess.
And do you think your mom was saying that? Like, I'm guessing she wasn't saying it. Like, he promised you these fancy things. Where are the fancy things? I think she's sensing that, like, this seems a little over the top.
Yeah.
Like, is it real?
She was. And she was also like, well, he said it was going to happen. Why is it not happening? It's not even like, it was okay. Well, that was really over the top, but why isn't it happening? Because he said there's a couple things that are adding up that he said he would do that he hasn't.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, well, you're not in the day-to-day stuff. You're like, you know, on the outside and you're getting told these big, exciting things. Because of course, when I come home and I'm telling my parents about this, I'm not going to tell them all the little like coffee shop conversations we had. I'm going to give them the big headlines. I'm going to be like,
totally.
Yo, he promised me a piano. You know, oh my gosh, his friend's going to fly me to New York. So they've got all these, you know, big events stuck in their head, but they're not hearing all the intimate conversations we're having and all the little things he's doing or buying for me or whatever. So I trust him fully. And just the fact that I might not get that dress from New York, I'm not holding that against him. That's
totally
a Brian and Kimmy thing.
Yeah.
And the piano thing, I'm not holding that against him because it's still coming. It's just not coming yet, you know, because he's getting me this $10,000 ring. So of course I'm not going to expect, you know, a crazy expensive piano or, you know, whatever. So I think my parents, they wanted to like meet up with him or something. No, he would text my mom out of nowhere, He asked for her number and would say like, you know, hey, Mama Rose, just praying for you today, thinking about you. Just super grateful. You did a great job with your daughter and I'm reaping the benefits pretty much. Like
the Mama Rose thing bothers me. It's not your mom yet. That's not
right.
Like that's not,
oh, yeah, but they,
that's not your mom. So
you're preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
I, and my mom, bless her, she has always, like with guys I've dated, she's been a really quick to be like, oh, my son, because she just loves being a mom.
Yeah.
So I've had to have that talk with her a few times where I'm like, we have to have some boundaries, mom, because this might be really awkward if I have to, you know, break things off.
Yeah.
And, or if we still know that guy later, like there was a guy I, you know, saw for a short time way back in the day and long after we broke up, she still called him her son. And I was like, you need to
Mom,
please don't. So
okay, so that's not all his fault then. Fair.
Yeah. She was, and my mom also says, you know, my mom will say to this day, in my defense, like in Sarah's defense, she was head over heels for him. Like she really fell for him, and she started saying, "I love you" to him, because he knew those spots that a mom wants, you know, wants to be touched on. He was just like, "I will take care of her," and he constantly complimented her in me, kind of like, I see this in her. I see this. That's a result of what you did. Like smooth as silk. And he would say, I see where she gets this from. That must have been from you. And he knew exactly what to call out. And then with Dad, he, you know, would talk, I don't know, guns and meat and, you know, smoking and try to talk about the fire department. And he just, there's looking back. And of course it drove my dad nuts because he was a know-it-all.
But yeah, I remember the barbecue thing. Like he was like, it's like your dad's like tried and true recipe. And your ex was like, no, let's try and do it.
Yeah. And then we were eating like these charred little pieces of charcoal for dinner. And my ex is like, oh, it was, you know, blah, 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 blah. And my sister's like, I hate this guy. I didn't know any of that though, because I didn't see these sides of the conversation. Mm-hmm. And later, you know, when my friends would say, oh yeah, the guy was an asshole to me, I never saw any of that because he knew who I talked about the most. He knew who really mattered to me. And so mm-hmm. to those people, he treated them like he treated me. But if he didn't know them, you know, if I didn't talk about them, he didn't really care. So they kind of saw his like flippant asshole side.
Yeah.
And, you know, found all that out later. So now my parents are getting more and more freaked out because this pattern that he established at the beginning, mm-hmm. which was granted over the top, way too, you know, he was just kissing up like crazy. It changed. So they recognized that he was kind of over the top at the beginning and that was fine. But what they weren't okay with was the sudden change in pattern. And that's mm-hmm. what, you know, was alerting their red flags. And so my mom starts reaching out to me more and going, hey, and I'm going, I'm sorry. You're, you know, I'm a grown ass woman. If he hasn't texted you back, I'm sorry. Like, but don't, he's not obligated to, and I'm not obligated to explain this to you. I didn't know what was going on in my mom's head. I didn't know how often he had been talking to her, and I yeah. didn't know, I didn't recognize the major tone change, and she saw it, you know, so that's why she was concerned. I just thought they were meddling, mm-hmm. and my parents didn't want me to think, you know, because they're not like that, mm-hmm. but they didn't know how to react. They're like, okay, if we freak out too much and try to warn her, she's going to think that we're being controlling. If we do nothing and we find out that he is a liar, we might, you know, never be able to forgive ourselves. So they're kind of in this really awkward situation. So while all this is going on and I'm siding with my fiance, because there was, I forget now, there was a misunderstanding between like him and my dad or something. And my mom called me one time and I was walking around Midtown Sacramento and I took my fiance's side and my mom took my dad's side and it was not pretty. And I pretty much was saying, I don't owe you an explanation. I'm like, I'm sorry. That's your relationship. This is mine. There's been a misunderstanding and dad and he need to figure this out, but I don't know why you and I are hashing this out. This is completely inappropriate.
Yeah.
And my mom was like, well, you're right, but there are things you don't know that's been going on and we're concerned. And I was just like, then figure it out yourself. Like, go talk to him. And she was going, well, we're trying, but he's not responding. And I'm like, well, he's busy. 'Cause he was telling me how stressed he was with work and he had a lot going on. And I'm just like, look, we'll get this sorted out at some point, but would you just calm down? Like not everything has to get figured out within a week, you know?
Yeah.
Granted, on my parents' side, things are moving faster. We have a wedding coming up and they're thinking, well, if there are issues that need to get sorted out, you know, we need to get this sorted out before she's locked in. And mm-hmm. my mom was saying, you're acting like he's your husband, but he's not yet. Just please keep a level head. He's not your husband yet. So we were just, you know, back and forth. And this whole time, Kimmy's texting me going, hey, I've heard through the grapevine, you know, Brian's been talking to, you know, your fiance a lot. And it sounds like there might be some trouble going on. Like you want to talk, I'm here for you. And so I would say, you know, yeah, there's kind of this going on. And Kimmy was like, holy crap, that's extremely inappropriate. And your parents are way too involved. Like that's, she used to say all the time, well, that's not biblical. Now that I think back, I'm like, there's nothing that doesn't apply.
Yeah, I mean, like I believe in God. I don't know the Bible like super well, but like, I don't think I've ever heard anyone talk about that before. Like no. I've had a lot of friends that are pretty into the Bible, but I don't think I've ever heard anyone say your parents isn't biblical.
Oh. No, and the Bible doesn't really say anything about how involved or uninvolved your parents should be in it. That was her way of arguing that something is not right. And by then I wasn't myself. And I see that now.
All right, this concludes part one of Sarah's story. And next week, we are going to hear the insane conclusion. And it is full of twists and turns. So stay tuned next week for Sarah's story.